Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to All Things Policy. China seems to have gotten over the worst of the COVID-19 pandemic, at least so far. And we're seeing increased Chinese aggression in the South China Sea, in the East China Sea. And whether or not this is connected, it begs the question, what has been the impact of this pandemic on China's armed forces? China has actually been claiming that they have no infections in the PLA, the People's Liberation Army, that it's probably not very likely. And to discuss what exactly the impact is going to be on China, I have with me Suyash and Manoj. Welcome, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Good to be here.
So I want to start with you, Suyash. China claims that absolutely no PLA personnel have been infected by this disease. How likely is that?
It's not very likely because we've seen in many countries, the military personnel have been infected with COVID-19. Also, the deployment this time, if you break down the deployment of PLA personnel in Hubei and Wuhan region, 4,000 of them were military medics. And the total deployment is around 6 to 7,000 military personnel. So the claim, since the virus is so infectious, the claim that PLA personnel are not infected, I think, is not appropriate. At least, if forget the logistic personnel, we are pretty sure that at least there are some infections within PLA medics because they were at the forefront of all the operations. So our estimate shows that at least there is 2 to 3% of infection within PLA medics.
Right. How do you go about estimating this?
So we have taken three broad criteria. One, we have seen the infection rate in Italy, in Spain, and also in China. So in China, we have seen the infection rate. All these infection rates are for civilian medics. And we have taken this criteria with an assumption that the equipment, apparatus, and working conditions are same for a civilian medic and a military medic. Based on this criteria, so we estimate that we take a China's estimate, civilian medics estimate, and we apply it to PLA medics to come to the figure.
Yeah, so that's actually a very conservative way of estimating because it's likely that at the beginning of the outbreak, a lot of protective equipment may not have been available to the Chinese. They may not have actually realized how infectious the disease was. Italy and Spain eventually had more time to prepare. Now, what about the SARS epidemic nearly 20 years back? What were there PLA personnel infected back then?
Yes. So during SARS, which happened in 2003, PLA made a similar claim that no military personnel are infected by the epidemic. But later, a whistleblower went to American press and which later, after that whistleblower's reports, later WHO came out with a report saying that estimatedly 8% of the infections, of the total infections in China among the military personnel. So similar claims were made in SARS. During SARS epidemic, and the same claims are made during COVID-19. So I'm sure there are pretty much few infections now as well.
So I want to ask you guys, how many PLA personnel do you think or estimate ballpark are affected by this? And do you think the PLA has it under control?
So having it under control, obviously their projection has been that they have it under control, and therefore you're seeing increasing reports of more exercises that they are conducting. A lot of this is because things were on a standstill. And also there's been aggression that you've seen in the South China Sea and other places. But in terms of the number of infections, I mean, Suyash has sort of captured how we've gone about doing this. But if you just start with the basic assumption of the Chinese saying that there are zero infections, that's obviously bunkum. If you just look around the world, Taiwan has infections in the Navy, the US, India has infections in the Navy. So It sounds slightly fanciful that the Chinese have zero infections in their armed forces. In terms of how we went about tabulating it and how we kind of calculate a figure, like you said, Aditya, that this is a very, very conservative estimate, and we try and sort of say that in the document that this is a conservative estimate. But this is how we go about it, right? We look at the number of medical infections in Italy and Spain, where we have clearer data, and where this epidemic has played out for us for a number of days, for a number of weeks. In Italy, in late March, we knew that about 8.3% of the infections were in healthcare workers. In Spain, we knew that it was about 14%. In China, the China Center for Disease Control conducted a study in mid-February where they found that in the early stages, so from February 1st to February 11th, they found roughly 3,000 infections. So 3,019 infections is what they said. Some of about 1,000 plus of these were positive cases, rest were suspected, and eventually, subsequently, if you see in Chinese media reports, they've estimated this number as 3,000 infections among civilian medical personnel who were dealing with this. We then looked at how many medical personnel, civilian medical personnel from across the country were involved in operations in Wuhan and Hubei. And we got the answer that there were about 122,000 medical personnel deployed. So you do a 3,019 of 122,000 and you get a figure of 2.16%. So 2.16% of all medical workers deployed in Wuhan and Hubei were infected. And this is basically based from the based on the official data that the Chinese have pulled out. Now, if you look at a similar rate in terms of what has happened with the PLA, if you have 4,000 PLA medical personnel deployed, which is what Suyash explained earlier, you apply that 2.16% to this, assuming that these individuals had similar protective equipment as the civilian medical personnel and took similar precautions because they also ran hospitals and all in Wuhan, you would get to a figure of at least 86 to 87 infections. And this is terribly conservative. Now, if you look at the rate of infection from these being, some of these being asymptomatic, some of these being symptomatic, and the rate of infection of spread from one individual to another, you will see that the number should be far higher. But at a very, very minimum level, you will have around 86 to 87 hundred odd infections, at least in the PLA. That's basically our estimate. We also talk about other reports which came out within China very early on about, a submarine unit in Sanya being put into isolation with, and the unit had about 300 personnel, and this was because of threat of infections. There were also reports of infections among the paramilitary forces, People's Armed Police, and the Rocket Force, at a university, the Rocket Force University of Engineering. And there was also a report of the Shandong aircraft carrier being hit. But all of this eventually has sort of been, they've said that there's nothing like this that's happened. But that's obviously bunkum. And this very conservative estimate tells you why it's bunkum.
So Wuhan is the headquarters for PLA's airborne core. And there were early reports that there are some infections found in that unit as well, in the headquarters as well. But again, the reports were taken down and we have no details about it later on. And the PLA clarified that there are no such reports.
I guess this is just going to be a hunch. But how much success do you think that the PLA will have in containing this? Because I'm assuming they're pretty good at testing and screening people.
Yeah, I mean, I think the challenge with the infection would be exactly the same as that would be with sort of any other armed forces. People sort of in one area, in living in close quarters, working in, very close sort of contact constantly. So it would be challenging. I presume what we are not seeing and what's not being reported is that there would be bases, there would be garrisons which would be shut. There would be places where they would have put in certain protocols to try and make sure that they are testing people far more. And this stuff has not been reported. How well they'll be able to deal with it, it's tricky to sort of answer. But my sense is that they'll have a better handle on it than others at the moment because they've had a head start and they've sort of figured out at least how do you test and how do you then sort of try and contain. So I presume some of what's worked in Wuhan will also work in different smaller sort of zones. So I presume they've put some protocols in place, but none of it is public knowledge.
Now I want to ask you guys how this might in any way be impacting China's defense industry. Factories have been closed all over the world, including in China. Is the PLA seeing an impact?
For these estimates, we have started with Wuhan and Hubei and then gone on to other provinces. So we know from the fact, reported fact, that 22 provinces in China were under lockdown. Of this, Hubei was under severe lockdown. So there are a few important things, importing manufacturing units in Hubei. There are 6 research institutes in Hubei, which are responsible for naval manufacturing. So Hubei is called cradle of Chinese shipbuilding industry. Also, the Wuchang shipyard in Hubei is an important player for manufacturing SSNs and diesel electric submarines. Now we go to Shanghai, which there were reports about Shanghai's Qingnan shipyard being closed for some days. This shipyard is responsible for manufacturing Type 002 cruiser and Type 002 carrier, which is their third aircraft carrier, second indigenous aircraft carrier, and Type 005 cruisers. Similarly, Dalian shipyard, Wenchang shipyard, other shipyards were closed. So, taking all this into consideration, we come to a conclusion that the rate of manufacturing will fall down. So there were some deadlines expected. The deadlines would be pushed forward due to this close down. The most impacted region was, of course, Hubei. So the direct impact would be on submarine productions, because Wuchang shipyard is responsible for submarines. But in other shipyards as well, the reports came in that they started opening in mid-February, end February. But we are pretty sure that they wouldn't be operating at the full level as they were before the lockdown happened. So all the deadlines would be pushed forward, and this would have a short-term impact on the rate of the strike rate of manufacturing for naval and air force production.
If I can add, our sense is that, like Suresh said, that there is a short-term impact in terms of delays, in terms of these industries, these companies sort of operating on full capacity, and also supply chain impacts and all of this. But there's a sort of a long-term impact also of this, which is in terms of what happens to the Chinese economy. If you're going to be slowing down to 1-odd% of growth this year, and if you're going to face demand shocks, and you're potentially going to face some degree of deglobalization going forward, how does that slow down overall economic growth? How does that then impact the shifting of your cost matrix from increased procurement to the money now going to maintenance as opposed to spending on newer equipment? And that will then change the balance of how the force develops going forward, whether it's the Navy or it's the Air Force. And I think that is the sort of long-term impact that we can think of in terms of what happens to the defense industry.
Right, yeah. So we're probably likely to see at least a slowdown in expansion and more consolidation.
So if you remember 2015 and 2019 defense white paper, we're talking about from near seas, coastal defense to far seas. So most of these areas, there are PLA Air Force and PLA Naval manufacturing units. So these two services are in for a toss for some time now, which will impact their goals and ambitions of near sea to far sea. How this will manifest itself or play out, we'll be observing that. But certainly in the near term, their goals can be pushed.
All right. So now what is the impact of this situation on training, recruitment, getting new personnel? How have those been impacted?
Okay. PLA has a novel conscription model. In that model, you are supposed to do training for 2 years. That is, conscript has to come into the compulsory training for 2 years. And then you have a choice to whether continue or walk out of it. So the recent amendment to conscriptions happened in January 2020. Before January 2020, the conscription model was once a year and used to happen in September. Now, they have made it twice a year, March and September, with the same amount of conscripts that they used to take previously. So this was the first year why they had done it twice a year. Why they did it twice a year? Because the attrition rate in PLA is around 15%. So due to the attrition, PLA scholars have observed that there are 3 months in PLA when the force is at the weakest. We cannot say weakest per se, but is quite vulnerable due to the reducing manpower. And that's why they started doing conscriptions. They had planned conscriptions early this year so that to reduce the lag of that vulnerability. But unfortunately, it didn't happen this year. And so they will have to continue with the same model for yet another year, with the hope that they will be able to do conscription twice a year next year in 2021.
Now, what is the impact of this slowdown? We've talked about the impact of the slowdown of the economy on modernizing budgets, expansion. What is the impact of the slowdown in the economy on recruitment?
Yeah, my sense in this is that, look, this might actually, in that sense, in that limited sense, it could actually be sort of a bit of a boon for the PLA, because as they've been modernizing and they've been developing, sort of going from manpower, a manpower intensive force to a firepower intensive force, focusing on new technologies and so on and so forth, you require a more highly educated recruit to work on all of this. You require somebody who's much more savvy, much more smart, much more technically skilled, and so on and so forth. So, but that's been difficult, right? Because China has been growing quite rapidly. Its tech industry, its innovation base has been expanding. So more people, if you're an individual who's graduating, who's got the choice of being with the armed forces, with you know, all the risks that come with that, along with the fact that your pay will be limited compared to working for a Baidu, Alibaba, Tencent, or any of the hundreds of other companies in China and the new sort of unicorns, you probably will choose those, right? That's better career prospects. But if there is a slowdown and the economic slowdown starts to hit a broader industry in China, and there are layoffs and there is unemployment and salaries get depressed and so on and so forth, that makes the PLA far more attractive. It provides you job stability. It provides you respect and reputation in some ways, and all of that sort of then works. So it, in that sense, it might actually work in the benefit, because it improves the attractiveness of the PLA as a stable job provider with a, you know, solid income, and your other options in the market have become far more compressed. So that might actually help it in that sense, right?
And also, since 2011 and 2013, whatever Manoj has said, they are, PLA is trying a lot to recruit higher talent. So they have given positive inducements, scholarships, etc. They have arranged their conscriptions at the time when college students graduate more and more to attract higher talents than the lower educated talents, which will essentially go for their ground forces. They're trying to also recruit university students so that they can come into their rocket forces, now SSF, and also more advanced talent.
So this is actually a fairly common phenomenon. We see this in India as well. We see it in other countries. A time of economic downturn is actually a boon for armed forces, especially when they're recruiting officers or people in more technologically oriented fields. But how is all of this impacting the actual training of PLA? Not just training new recruits, but also conducting military exercises. Is there an impact? Do we foresee some impact?
So yes, there is an impact on training cycles. The number of training cycles, as we have pointed out in the report, have gone down. Because so training can be divided into PLA military training within itself in China, or bilateral training. So their bilateral training has gone down. So month on month. So for instance, they had three trainings, bilateral trainings or multilateral trainings in November. They had some trainings in December, but since January, they hardly had any training, and only one training in February and March each with Cambodia, I believe. So training is very important for PLA, because criticism about the PLA that the forces should be combat ready. This outbreak has severely affected training cycles, because the number of training has gone down. But this is again in a very limited sense. 3 or 4 months of no training is surely not going to make them more or less combat ready. But yes, for a few months, number of trainings that they do with foreign armies have certainly gone down.
Yeah, I guess this also depends on how bad and how long the sort of impact of this pandemic is on globally, right? Because across the world, bilateral drills, multilateral drills are going to be in short supply for this year. So the PLA will not be the only one that's not going to be dealing with this. It's also others. And that's, I think, one of the phenomena that's going to take place throughout the year until things sort of stabilize. And even when they stabilize, it'll now be seen who engages, how much, and whether some of these drills actually happen, and how other states respond, given the concerns that the PLA has underreported or honestly lied on in terms of the number of infections. So can you actually trust them? Because you don't want another outbreak in one of your vessels or something like that, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'd assume another country's armed forces would actually be wary about conducting exercises in close quarters with anyone else, right?
Yeah.
Just because of fear of infection. Yeah. Okay.
No, but however, there is a catch here. In March, Cambodia and China had a 15 or 16 days continuous exercise in Cambodia. And this was when outbreak was slowing down.
How does all of this fit into China's behavior in recent weeks and months, actually? There's been this pattern where we've seen greater Chinese assertiveness, like I said, in the South China Sea, East China Sea. A lot of this dates back to January, perhaps even December. Is there a connection? Can we draw a connection? Is there a causation to this correlation?
There is a causation. It can be slightly tenuous, but my sense is the causation is not that. So there are two aspects of it. One is that I do think that as the pandemic sort of expanded globally, the Chinese sort of dialed up the pressure on what they were otherwise anyway doing in the South China Sea. They see it as an opportunity, perhaps, with the U.S. busy. And at least that's how the Americans have seen what the Chinese have done, given the statement by the State Department recently, which specifically said this, that you are exploiting the distraction or vulnerability of other states to expand your unlawful claims in the South China Sea. And that was the State Department saying it. So at least the U.S. has seen it this way. What Chinese intentions are difficult to gauge. My sense is that, yes, there's partly a case that you've seen an opportunity. And you see an opportunity to browbeat smaller powers and test U.S. resolve and Western resolve. But there's another aspect to all of this, and which is what I think is probably far more important, which is that this aggression and this posturing is really useful from a domestic propaganda point of view, right? At a point where the Chinese feel hemmed in by very aggressive rhetoric coming from the U.S., and not just the U.S., but even other sort of actors in the international order saying things like, well, we need to come to the bottom of how this virus spread, and the Chinese need to come clean and those sorts of things. This is really useful pivot where you can, and also there must be lots of pressure domestically with regard to the shutdown and the fact that this virus initially spread from there, and you know, the silencing of whistleblowers and all of that. So there must be lots of anger in there. So you're feeling hemmed in. The party seems to be feeling hemmed in. And this is a good way to sort of divert energies, distract attention, and you know, focus your domestic audiences to the object of, look, we are being pressurized by all these external forces on how wonderfully we've done and how badly they've failed, and also on our legitimate so-called territorial claims. So I think there's a bit of both of those aspects playing out.
Okay, yeah. So the thing about this is, whatever China's intentions are, what really matter ultimately will be perceived intentions in the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And as long as the rest of the world thinks that the Chinese are taking advantage of the situation, there is a chance that it'll backfire in the future, right?
Our conclusion is essentially this, right? That this would undermine, actually, in the long term, any conversation on this code of conduct negotiations that they were trying to engage in the South China Sea. And in the long term, again, it would, you know, some states might get browbeaten, which would anyway be falling within the Chinese orbit. But others, actually, whether it's Indonesia, whether it's Vietnam, potentially even the Philippines, where there is a political divide and armed forces divide, you might actually see far more balancing. And the issue is, will the Americans be there to put their money where their mouth is to balance things? That would be the sort of broader challenge. Because my sense would be that these states would now be far more ripe for balancing, given what the Chinese have been doing with their one survey vessel going all across the South China Sea, you know, raising heckles everywhere from Vietnam to Malaysia. So, you know, I think this is going to play out negatively for them in the long run, like you said.
Okay, cool. So just to try and summarize the arguments you guys are making, well, one is that the PLA has almost certainly had infections, even if those infections are fairly low numbers. There has been certainly some short-term disruption to manufacturing, to recruitment, to training. There are also likely to be long-term impacts because of the slowing down economy. So in recruitment, you might get more people. On the other hand, you'd have less money to modernize, to expand. And all of this is likely connected to China's greater assertiveness in East Asia.
Yep.
Is that a fair summary?
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much, guys. And thank you for joining us on All Things Policy.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.